Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. It is June 18th, 2020, and I am so glad that you are tuned in today because we're going to get right to it, much like we did yesterday with our dear friend Jason Ruff of the Odessa Jackalopes. We have another Current Sports feature interview throughout this hour, and today we will feature our dear friend Anthony Iani, who is a former Michigan State men's basketball player. He is now a motivational speaker, and as of this week, he has added another really, really cool title to his already blossoming resume. So we've got a big announcement to release here on WKAR's Current Sports. He'll get to that announcement, and we'll talk so much more, all right? I want you to just sit back, relax, and enjoy this chat with, again, Anthony Iani, former MSU men's basketball big man, motivational speaker, and, yeah, also something else. Check it out.
This is the first time we've had you on. You know, since COVID-19 has happened and really right. blown up all of our worlds, just kind of take us through what you've been up to, man, how you've been keeping busy and just how crazy of a time this has been for you and your family.
Like you said, it's definitely been crazy. My wife went back to work this past Monday, you know, with the hair salons opening back up and barbershops opening back up. So she went back to work on Monday. She's been working all this week, staying busy. But, you know, just having that 3.5 months or whatever it was of time together as a family, I mean, that was probably the one thing that we loved so much, was just having all that time together, getting out in the backyard, the front yard, letting our kids run around. We ordered a new swing set for our kids so they could just goof around on that. So having that extra time, you know, with a family is really made me realize, you know, what's really important in life. Because, you know, at the time, Al, you know, I said this to my wife, and I think this was like back in March. My last day on the road was March 11th. You know, I came back from Nebraska, and that was when everything started to unravel. Rudy Gobert, you know, was tested positive for COVID-19. That's when the NBA suspended its season. And I remember just sitting in a hotel in Lincoln, Nebraska, just saying to myself, like, I need to go home. Like, I cannot be here right now. I just need to get on this plane, go home. Because, you know, my host in Nebraska kind of joked with me, like, oh, what if they cancel the flight? What if you're stuck here? I'm like, don't say that to me right now. I don't want to think about that. So, yeah. And then obviously the lockdown happens. And then, you know, the big question for me is, all right, I have all these presentations. What am I supposed to do? So I had to reach out to all my contacts who scheduled me between March 12th up until like May 20th. And we had to like either cancel it or reschedule it to the fall. And if it happens in the fall, so since then, you know, I did about 80 videos for public schools around the state of Michigan, just 1 to 2 minute videos on staying positive and continuing to support each other during this time. Then the last month, couple of weeks, I've been doing a lot of virtual presentations for anti-bullying and autism. So I'm still able to stay busy with everything, you know, as far as my presentations and my messages go. But I mean, like you said, man, it's been a crazy time. And this is a time where, You know, our kids, you know, when they're in elementary school, they're going to ask us the question, where were you when the 2020 pandemic happened? What was your, you know, reaction to everything? Because it's like those reports I used to do in middle school or elementary school with my grandparents. You know, what was it like when World War II happened, or like when, you know, my great grandmother, you know, passed away in 2008. She was 99 years old when she died. She lived during the Great Depression. So I got to ask her about what was it like then. So, you know, the fact we're going to be having these conversations with our kids, you know, just kind of tells me that, you know, we lived in a history. I don't want to say it's history making, but in a sense it is, because, you know, we lived through a time period where just so much has happened. But at the same time, I was on a roll, man. Like, I was on the road every day. I was on pace to speak to over 160,000 people this year alone. You know, obviously, wow. Like, you know, it only ended up being like a little over 40,000, which is pretty good. But I remember just telling my wife, like, I was on such a roll, and then this happens. Like, you know, I felt like that I was kind of robbed of so many different opportunities. And my wife just said to me, she said, well, you know, maybe this is the man upstairs telling everybody, just kind of slow down and take a step back and just be thankful for everything that you have in life. And so all the time we spent together as a family, like, I've been so thankful for that. But at the same time, it was tough because not seeing my parents for so long, not seeing my, you know, my nieces, my nephews, my wife's side of the family for so long. And so, you know, that was tough. But, you know, I think at the same time, it made me mentally tougher, you know, back to the old days of Michigan State and those workouts, you know, it made me tougher as a person mentally. So, but I definitely learned a lot during this lockdown, during this pandemic, for sure.
And, you know, it is a blessing in disguise, really. I mean, it's all about perception, right? And yeah. Looking at this, you know, my family told me the same thing. I'm so used to being busy, 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 busy. And then something like this happens. And yeah, I looked at it as a sign. I still look at it as a sign, as the man upstairs is saying, look, all that busy, 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 slow down, focus on me and focus on what's important, right? And and I'm wondering for you, Ant, you know, this is also something I've had conversations with my family, you know, kids who are going through this. I mean, yeah, this is one of those moments. Where were you when? And for kids out there who are also used to being at school, right? Used to being around their friends, a lot of them now are just sitting at home and, you know, being a little bit restless, right? Or a lot restless, I should say.
Yeah.
And you talk to kids all the time. That's what you do. I'm wondering, what have those conversations been like? And then the other layer to that is, you know, I've read so many articles about how kids are in homes that aren't the best. And, you know, unfortunately, some of them are in abusive homes. And now they're forced to be at home and in that kind of environment. What kind of stories have you heard when talking with kids virtually, and what has been your message to kids out there who are stuck at home?
Obviously, you know, one of my messages is, you know, try to get out in that backyard and continue to stay active as much as possible. Some of the presentations I've done, they've been for high school basketball teams in New Jersey. And so that was my biggest message to them, is get out in that backyard, front yard, wherever, get that ball in your hand and just work on the little things, work on drills. So at least you're staying active, so you're not cooped up in the house. I mean, that was one of my biggest messages to students, is that just get out of the house, get in your backyard, your front yard, and just play around. I mean, nobody's telling you can't go outside and just play in your own yard. You know, stay active. But I think, and this is the one thing that I loved about sending those videos to those schools, was that, you know, continue to stay positive, you know, continue to stay positive no matter what, during the good, the bad, the negative. Like, you've got to continue to stay positive no matter what, because if you walk around with a negative mindset all the time, you know, you're going to throw that negative vibe off of different people, whether it's your family, your friends. And that's the last thing we need right now, is to have negative thoughts and negative vibes toward each other. So I always encourage students to continue to stay positive no matter what. And the biggest thing is, continue to support one another, whether it's your family, your friends, your teammates, friends, teachers, you know, colleagues, whoever, because that's what we need right now. And so I know there are some individuals out there who have different living situations, but, you know, when they hear continue to stay positive no matter what, you know, that really sticks with them, because it's like, okay, I'm having a bad day, but I got to continue to stay positive because tomorrow's a new day. You know, tomorrow, the sun's going to come up again tomorrow and things are going to be better tomorrow. Like, that's just the mindset that you got to have. And so, you know, that was always my message. And that's been my message for the last, you know, couple months since the pandemic happened, which is, you know, just continue to stay positive no matter what.
Definitely. Those around you, you know, specifically your former, you know, teammates when you were balling out at Michigan State, you know, what kind of conversations have you had with them, and how are they also holding up during this whole crazy time? And then we got stripped of March Madness, brother. Which, I mean, that was crazy, right?
And it honestly, Al, like, it broke my heart. Like, when they canceled the Big Ten tournament, that's when I was like, all right, tournaments are getting canceled one by one. And I was like, part of me thinks the NCAA tournament is going to get canceled, because there's no way. Granted, I get there's a lot of money at stake on both sides when it comes to, you know, the universities, when it comes to the NCAA and the TV deals. But, you know, I'm willing to bet the NCAA is going to make sure everybody's health comes first before anything. And then, because I had just landed from Nebraska, and that's when they canceled the Big Ten tournament. And then an hour later, they canceled the NCAA tournament. And my heart kind of just sank, because I felt so bad for guys like Cassius Winston, who, in my opinion, I think was going to lead us to the national championship. Obviously, I'm biased toward that, but, you know, the way Michigan State was playing and the way they were getting their groove together, like, they were the best team in the country. And we talked about this in the past. There was no clear-cut favorite for the national championship. Like, this was one of those tournaments where anything could happen. And then it was taken away from not just the seniors and the players and teams all over the country, but it was taken away from the fans. And that was, you know, I understand why it needed to be done, obviously, but it broke my heart to see somebody like Cassius Winston and Kyle Ahrens, and even Connor George, seniors who didn't get the opportunity to redeem themselves from last year's Final Four loss. And I've been in touch with a couple of my former teammates. I talked to Kenny Goins when he got back from Italy, because I want to know, you know, what was that situation like compared to here in the United States? And he was telling me how Italy was definitely a lot more strict when it came to their rules. Like, he said, you couldn't leave your house unless literally you had a hall pass to show to law enforcement saying, I'm going to the grocery store or I'm going to get gas. He said, that's the only reason why they would ever let you leave your house.
Wow.
I can understand why, you know, Italy's numbers are doing so well, is because they put in strict, you know, restrictions like that. They were strict on that. So, and then if you look at what our state has done, I mean, we've done an incredible job, and I know people didn't like it, but, you know, I mean, now us in New York are leading the country right now in lowest positive cases per week, which is great. But, you know, just hearing Kenny's story and just how, like, it was so much different out in Italy when it came to their rules and restrictions compared to ours, I was like, man, like, I can't even imagine leaving my house and showing, like, a police officer a hall pass. My hall pass. It's like going back to the high school days. Here's my hall pass to go to the bathroom. Here's my hall pass to go to the office. Like, I couldn't imagine that. But, and then I talked to Travis Bader, who played at Oakland, and he was in Spain. And he was telling me him and his wife got, like, the last flight out, you know, to the United States. And, you know, Jordan Morgan, you know, another guy who played at U of M, you know, J-Mo and I are good friends. You know, I was texting him. Same story. Him and his wife got the last flight out from Turkey to the United States. Had they not caught that flight, they would still be in Turkey right now. And it was just amazing. But, you know, I'm just glad, you know, all my guys, all my former teammates, you know, are back home safe and sound.
Without a doubt, brother. And I'm curious, man, just from a personal standpoint, is there a part of you that still is a bit wary, still is a bit afraid that our country maybe opening up a little bit too soon? And I know a lot of states are making the decision. You know, this country is looking at things. Small business owners are looking at their companies and saying, look, if I don't open now, then I'm going to lose a lot of money, or I'm at risk of losing the business, period. So a lot of people are kind of forced to just say, hey, let's roll with it and try and adhere to the guidelines. But is there a part of you that's still a bit afraid or weary right now?
I wouldn't say afraid, Al, because, you know, as long as we do our part and as long as we go out, you know, continue to practice, you know, social distancing, continue to wear masks in stores. And, you know, I was talking to one of my buddies yesterday, and I talked to him about how, you know, the cool thing with the mask is that you can buy a mask with a really cool design on it and walk around like you're the man in the store with the coolest mask in town. So that's kind of my mentality, you know. I mean, recently I just bought a new Michigan State mask, and I can't wait to wear it. It's show my Spartan pride, you know. But obviously, is there still part of me that's a little weary? Yeah, of course. And, you know, I'm more than positive. I'm not the only person in that same boat, too. I mean, a lot of us probably feel like that, because, I mean, we were at home for so long. you know, in a lockdown, like we didn't know, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. There's still a lot of what ifs. Like we still don't know if there's going to be college football, you know, or not. You know, baseball's still trying to figure out, you know, the NBA says they're going to go back, but it's still not 100% certain yet. So, so as long as we continue to practice, you know, social distancing and continue to wear a mask and do our part, you know, we're going to be just fine. But, you know, but I think the key word obviously is safe, you know, doing everything safe, opening up safe. And, you know, we got the right experts on the job, you know, helping everybody out with that. So as long as we continue to do our part, I think we're going to be just fine.
All right, more with Anthony Iani, former Michigan State men's basketball big man, now motivational speaker. More with Ant in just a moment. When we come back, he will share his big announcement and more on this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back. We continue our chat with Anthony Iani, former Michigan State men's basketball player, now motivational speaker, as he is getting ready to share a big announcement with us all.
All right, what I want to do now is real quick, just double back, because you talked about, because I can't stop thinking about it. You know, and right now I'm talking to you via Zoom. Our listeners out there on the radio, you guys can't see us right now, of course. But Ann has a really cool, because I love how Zoom allows you to do that. Ann is staring at my apartment, which needs to be clean right now, actually. So I'm trying to like hide things. But you got the really cool Breslin Center background there. But I can't stop thinking about, like you just touched upon, Ann, where this team could have gone this year. And we did not know that. You know, we will be watching Cassius Winston play in his last game, that final game that clinched a share of the Big Ten regular season championship. We had no idea, in hindsight, that Cassius Winston, that was going to be his final game, rocking a green and white jersey. He goes down as one of the greatest Michigan State men's basketball players of all time. I put him on my personal Mount Rushmore. I think that highly of him. He was really, really special. When looking at Cassius Winston, what do you think his legacy is? Even though, you know, he didn't get that second national championship for Tom Izzo, what is his legacy at MSU, Ant?
I think, in my opinion, you know, maybe one of the probably the second greatest player in Michigan State basketball history. I mean, behind Magic Johnson. Just seeing where he came. Where he was as a freshman to where he ended up as a senior is incredible. I mean, just the things he did, the dribbling, the shots he made, the crazy shots he made. I mean, it really did bring you back to the days of Magic Johnson for those who got to watch Magic. Like, Cassius is our Magic Johnson, you know, just plain and simple because of how great he was. But I think he'll go down as maybe one of the best individuals to wear a Spartan jersey. What I mean by that is just his leadership, how he carried himself, how he carried himself in public, how he was great to our fans. Like, being around Cassius the time I was around him, I don't think I ever saw him. I don't think there's a bad bone in his body, to be honest. I mean, he cares so much about so many people, so many individuals. He cares about Michigan State. And I think that's why he's so high on my list. You know, Magic's Magic. I mean, let's be honest. Nobody's going to top Magic. You know, it's going to take somebody to win like three national championships and like two player of the years to top Magic Johnson, in my opinion. Yeah. But, you know, as far as everything else, I mean, Cassius did it all. He did it all. He did it all as a player. He did it all as a person. And, you know, I was proud as a former player. You know, not only am I proud to say, you know, I'm proud to have him as part of the Spartan Brotherhood for life, but I'm even more proud of the fact that he did all this at Michigan State.
So you put Cassius over Mateen Cleaves.
Yeah, I mean, it's no disrespect toward, you know, Mateen Cleaves or anything, but, you know, Cassius just did it all, man. He did it all. He had it all. And just how he And he didn't do it for himself. He did it for the team. He did it for this university. And, you know, and I think that just puts him a step above, you know, the Mateen Cleaves of the world, the Steve Smiths, you know, the Draymond Greens. I mean, Cassius is one of the greatest. And, you know, I think this is when I officially convinced my wife to like Cassius Winston, because she's a Michigan fan. So we went to, so when we played Michigan at home, we beat them up pretty good. And then we're driving home and my wife just says to me, she goes, you know what? She said, honey, I knew Cassius Winston was good. I didn't know he was that good. He's really good at basketball. I was, because she got to watch him, you know, on TV with me. But then when she saw how he played in, like, up close and live in person, that's when she really understood, okay, this guy's, he's really good. Like, just everything he was doing that day against Michigan, like, so.
It was special. But, you know, but you go against that argument, and, you know, because some will listen to this and say, well, but, you know, he was great, but he didn't win that natty like my team was able to do back in 2000. Right. You're always going to have those guys that you don't win the championship, and I can't put you, you know what I mean? I can't put you right up there over them, that kind of thing.
Well, it's like the, you know, who's the greatest football coach in Michigan State history? You know, some people will say it's Coach D'Antonio because of the wins, but then you also have other people that say, well, you know, Duffy and Biggie, you know, they won national championships, you know, so you got to keep them in the conversation. So, but what's so cool about debates is that, you know, we can have these kind of a debate, but then still remember how historically great both sides, you know, were and what they do, you know, how great Cassius was, how great Mateen was, how great Steve Smith was. So, you know, just having these conversations really makes you realize how great of a history we have at Michigan State when it comes to our sports programs.
That's so true. And I think, you know, I was having this discussion with a lot of cats, and when I was watching the Last Dance Michael Jordan documentary, and what adds to the mystique of Mike is that, you know, he left the game and went to go play, you know, baseball. He could have won two championships then. He left the game in 98 because of Jerry Reinsdorf and everything that happened. And there's a big what if with Mike. He could have had more than six. And there's a huge what if now with Cassius. You know, it's just that lore, that mystique of what if. Mm-hmm. You know, what if Cassius would have gotten a chance to play in the NCAA tournament this year? Would Tom Izzo have his second ring? You know, there's so much what if, and it kind of adds to that aura and mystique that is now Cassius Winston, right? And to do it all, going through the emotional trauma that was losing his brother, I couldn't believe how high of a level he was still playing when he went out there.
And it was incredible. And usually some, you know, people I talked to, you know, after Cassius' brother died asked me, like, how's he going to handle all this? How's he going to be able to play? And we all know, like, he was having a tough time handling it emotionally. But then once he finally got into the groove of, okay, this is what I'm going to do before, you know, the game starts. He still does. He did the handshake, you know, before. I don't know if you saw that. He did, him and his brother had a handshake. He did that before every game, I think, starting with the Michigan game. And that's when he really started to get his groove back. And I was like, so he's back. I said, once he finally found a way to kind of, like, get his mind into the game and then, you know, and worry about the other stuff outside, then he was good. So, but like you said, just how he handled that, how he was able to balance that and still go out and ball. Like, that's what impressed me the most about him. It really did.
So true. All right. I've delayed long enough. If you don't know, now you know. Ann has a big announcement that he wants to make. It's out there, but if you haven't heard, again, now you know. You've been working on this for a long time, and I just want to give you the honor. I'm going to have, some follow-up questions, but I want to give you the honor of announcing it here on Current Sports. What is the big news that you would like to share, brother?
So I recently signed a publishing deal with for my book with Indiana University Press for my memoir titled Centered. So it's scheduled to be released in fall 2021. And this was 2 years, almost 2.5 years in the making. And the fact that, you know, all these years I kept telling people, you know, I'm working on it, I'm doing it, I just got to look for the right, you know, publisher. The fact that, you know, I finally got a deal done and that this is actually going to happen, you know, 14 months from now or whatever it is, I'm over the moon, man. Like, I'm very, very excited. I'm very, very excited.
I bet you are, man. You know, we have been texting back and forth and chatting about this for so long. And can you just kind of give, for those that don't know, how tough this can be, you know, when it comes to to putting together a book and finding a publisher and that whole process. What was that like for you? And because, you know, to finally get to this point, it is really a triumphant moment for you. And for those that don't know the hurdles and the frustration that goes into this, can you kind of put that in perspective for those people?
Long process, I could tell you that. just trying so hard to stay patient with everything. I mean, that was probably the most difficult thing for me to do because, you know, when we finished the manuscript in the fall of 2018, my co-author, Rob Keese, who helped me write the book, you know, we finished the manuscript, but then we went into the process of, okay, we got to find an agent now. So we were sending a book proposal, you know, just a proposal to these agents. And I had, you know, good reactions. You know, the whole thing was, love the story, but it's not my fit. And then when we finally found one in Perry Literary Agency, Joe Perry, who's my agent, he fell in love with the story. He fell in love with, you know, the book and what we're trying to do. And so, you know, he kept sending book proposals to publishers and editors. And again, the response was, you know, we love the story, but, you know, it's just not a fit for our cat, just not a fit for us. And so, and it wasn't until we got an email from Indiana University Press that they were interested, because we sent it all out to all these, you know, big league publishers, little league publishers, mid-major publishers, if you will, university presses. And so we sent a bunch out to university presses, and then we didn't even send one out to IU. It was actually an editor at the University of Kentucky that we sent our proposal to. And the head editor at University of Kentucky Press used to work at IU. And so, you know, she sent it to IU and said, hey, you know, we love the story, but it's not a fit for us, but we think it'd be a perfect fit for IU. And that's when Indiana got back to us. And it probably took like a couple weeks to negotiate things. And then me and my co-author signed our contract a couple weeks ago. So the only people that really knew about the last 2 weeks were obviously my family and a couple close friends of mine. Coaches obviously knew, but not letting the whole world know yet. It was really, I was anxious. I was like, I want to tell everybody so I can just get it off my shoulder and I can finally go to work and just have some fun with the real process now of getting this done. But it was tough because, like I said, just being patient, checking my email almost every 30 minutes, and to the point where my wife was like, hey, stop. Like, it's going to happen. my old teammate and roommate from Grand Valley State, Mike Prisdale, who's like my brother to me, you know, we had a conversation about that too. He's like, dude, like, you can't rush greatness. All right. Greatness cannot be rushed. Like, you got to be patient with it. Like, you're going to find the right fit. Somebody's going to take this on and it's going to go above and beyond to bigger expectations than you thought. And so just trying to be patient was tough, but you know, like Mike told me, you know, you can't rush greatness. And I think that's what really kind of got me through the whole process was, you know, this is going to be great, but you can't rush it. If you want to be perfect, you got to stick with the plan. And so, you know, it's a tough process. So, but for anybody who wants to get in the book publishing business or write a book and then send it to people, it's going to take time. But as long as you have patience and you stick with the process, you know, everything is going to turn out pretty good.
And when did you know that you wanted to put together a memoir? Like, when did the idea first enter your head, and when did you put, you know, pen to paper? You know, that first time you did that?
I think about 3.5 years ago, Al, is when I really started to think about it. And when I kind of came to that conclusion of, okay, you know, I think it's time that you try it. Because I think like 7 years ago, I had people, you know, whether it was school administrators or people I talked to at conferences, just say to me, you know, you need to write a book. You need to do a memoir, an autobiography, because it could really take your career and soar your career to new heights that you couldn't imagine. And so the idea was always in the back of my mind, but I just didn't know how I was going to do it. And so, so initially I talked to Chris Solari at Atlantic State Journal about helping me out with it. And then, as we were starting to work on it together, my co-author now, Rob Keast, he is the cousin of my resource room teacher's husband. So my middle school resource room teacher, it's her husband's cousin. So that's where the connection was made. So Rob is a literature teacher at Wyandotte Roosevelt High School, but he graduated in journalism from Michigan State University. So he's worked with magazine publishers and editors. So he had a really good background with it. And so, you know, obviously Chris's schedule was a lot, as you know, for the Free Press, as you know. And so that's when Rob and I sat down and said, hey, what do you think about if we work together? And so we agreed to do it in 2018. And, you know, obviously, you know, Chris was, you know, he helped contribute, you know, helping Rob, you know, get like a lot of these articles and stats, because Rob wanted to know, you know, I need stats from this game in 1992. Can you help me out with it? And Chris would definitely help him out. So, but, you know, it was always talk of everybody. You need to do it. You need to try this. And so it was always in the back of my mind since 2013 that maybe I should do it, you know, but how would I do it? And so then I got the right people to help me, and then it just kind of took off from there. And so, and now my mom wants me to write a kid's book. So that's the next step.
I love it.
I told my mom this yesterday. I said, all right, let's give me a couple of years before I figure out, you know, what I want to do. Cause she always felt like that, you know, doing a manuscript, a memoir, and then doing a kid's book. She said those are two things that I should try to do. And so I got the memoir, you know, I could check that off. So the kid's book, maybe a couple of years from now. So, but it's, you know, it was, I'd say it was 2 years in the making, but you know, it all kind of started talking 2013. So I would have to say maybe it was close to 7 years in the making that it was all thought about.
So this is your own personal story, right, Ant?
Yeah, this is it from the day I was born to basically leading up to my first job, working with the Autism Alliance of Michigan. So that's as far as, you know, we wanted to take it. But, you know, there's so many more stories in there, you know. So we actually put, because I don't want to give too much away, we actually put my evaluations from my IEP plans in there to show, you know, families and parents and providers and educators, like, this is what these evaluators said about me when I was a kid. And these were like, and at first I was hesitant to do it because there's like personal stuff in here that these individuals say about me that I go like, what are you talking about? But my mom and Rob, my co-author, both thought that it would be really impactful and powerful for these families or educators and providers that are going to read this. And so we put that in the chapters. I also talk about, you know, why I left Grand Valley State, because a lot of people don't know the reason. A lot of people don't know my true reason why I left Grand Valley State after having two of the best years of college of my life at Grand Valley State. So, and there are more stories in there about how I was bullied as a kid, because, you know, I tell school administrators whenever I go to the schools and present, their students maybe only hear maybe 1/4 of my life story. And then, but now the book, they get to hear the rest of it. And so I think that's what I'm most excited about, is that these kids I talk to in schools, they get to hear the whole deal now. They don't just get to hear some of it when I present, they get to read about it now. So, and like I said, I'm just super excited. You know, I'm super excited to get my life story out there and basically tell the story of how the first Division I college basketball player in NCAA history managed to get to Michigan State.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And like you just touched on, and I mean, that's a really tough thing to be willing to be that vulnerable and to put yourself out there to the world, knowing that, you know, it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable for you. But in the end, in the long run, this can help some lost young kid out there who is going through the same thing that you went through. That makes it worth it in the end. But to be that vulnerable and open, that takes a lot of courage, doesn't it, man?
It does, because, you know, whenever Rob and I would just sit down and go over stuff, you know, I would read some of those chapters and go, oh, man, do I really want to put this in here? Do I really want to do this and say this? And, you know, I would sit down with Rob and then I would have a conversation with my family about it. And they were all like, the more powerful and impactful you want to make this thing, like that kind of thing, that kind of stuff has to be in there. As far as like my IEP plans and what, you know, happened to me as a kid and what was said about me as a kid. So, and then just me describing, you know, some of my coaches, you know, I'll use Dan Stultz as a great example. You know, Rob asked me, how would you describe, you know, Dan Stultz? I'm like, oh man. And then I would just say I would say, you know, he was really laid back, you know, but he was a great coach. He was intense. He'll get on you when you needed to. He was almost like a Coach Izzo, maybe except without the yelling and all the other stuff. But he took a lot of things that Coach Izzo did in practice and brought that over to Okemos. And but like when he asked me about certain people, it's like, oh man, like I got to give like actual descriptions about these people. Like, what am I going to say? So yeah. A lot of good things. I promise you, I don't think there's anything bad in there, but you know, just basically, like you said, just letting my whole life story get out there and what people really want to know about me. And there are things in there that I looked at, I'm like, I don't know. But again, the more impactful it can be, the more powerful it could be for the reader as well.
I don't want to spoil anything for those out there who are already intrigued about reading the book, but Ant, do you have a favorite chapter, maybe a favorite part of the book that you want to touch upon? That this would be like the ultimate tease for people to be like, all right, I'm getting it.
I think for me, it was about my senior year at Michigan State, because, you know, we went through a year at Michigan State in 2010, 2011, where, you know, we may have been one of the worst teams in coaches' tenure. And that's obviously not a badge of honor that you want to have as a former Michigan State player as part of that team. But I think just talking about my senior year leading up to my senior year, about what me and the other seniors talked about, what I had to do in order to help get ready for that year, and then leading up to when I was put on scholarship and what my role was going to be, you know, what I decided, what I wanted my role to be in the end, though. So I think just talking to that chapter about that season, that year, because it was special to me, because that was a season where nobody expected us to be good. Nobody expected us to be Big Ten champs, Big Ten tournament champs. I mean, we started off playing against North Carolina and Duke first two games of the season, you know, against the number one team and the number five team in the country. And then we go on a 15-game winning streak after that. I mean, nobody expected that to happen. So I think that was probably one of my favorite parts of the book. And of course, I'll have to go back and reread everything again as I, you know, go through the final editing process. But, you know, so far, just talking about my senior year and just how special it was, I think, you know, right now it's probably one of my favorite, you know, parts about the book so far.
So now that the logistics are taken care of, what are the next steps as far as getting this out to the public? Where are you at right now in the process, brother?
So right now we're just finishing up the manuscript. We're touching some things up. So we're going to send that to IU in a couple of weeks here. And then they're going to go into their final editing stages, and they're going to send it out to a bunch of people all over the country from different newspapers like the LA Times and New York Times, kind of get their feedback, reviews, if you will. I'm getting pictures together. You know, I get to be part of the process of what I want on the cover photo, and then IU will come up with the designs and everything like that. So hopefully like 6-7 months from now, you know, I'll send out, or, you know, just put on my social media what the cover photo is going to look like. And hopefully by then we'll have an official date. But I can tell you, Al, the expectations on IU's end are very, very high. You know, we met a couple weeks ago and they told me flat out, you know, we have a lot of high expectations for this book. We have a lot of high hopes for it, because what they love about the story, Al, is not only how it's told, how it's written, but what they love about it is how this book can market and hit different audiences all over the country. It can hit, you know, the sports audience. It can hit the autism community. It can hit schools, parents, teachers, providers, educators, or just individuals out there who love a good underdog story. So their expectations are high. And I think that's why the relationship, you know, why I signed with them was because they have the same vision and expectations as I do. And I think that's what has made our relationship so great so far, is that they see the same things that we want in this book and where we want to take it. And so I'm excited, you know, just getting photos together and just basically reminiscing about my childhood days, bringing back memories, me rocking my Michael Jordan jersey in the driveway and dribbling. I kid you not. I kid you not. So I found a picture of me wearing my Michael Jordan jersey in the driveway, and this is how big of a Michael Jordan fan I was. And then I also remember I had this basketball that had Jordan on it. It said Jordan on it, and it had Michael Jordan dunking, you know, in the background. I was like, man, I was a pretty big, you know, Michael Jordan fan back in the day. But
that's awesome.
Like anybody who loved Michael Jordan back in the day, you wanted to be like him. You wanted to be in the driveway and wear 23 on your shirt. And so,
right.
So going through pictures, I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's got to go in there. That's got to go in there. And then just seeing all the pictures leading up to the day I got married, like, I was just like, this is awesome, man. And like the whole world gets to see this. And so I'm just, like I said, I'm over the moon, man. I'm just really, really excited. And, you know, the process now of getting it done, and, you know, 14, 15 months may seem like a long time, but my agent told me, he said, it's going to go by fast. Like 6 months, you'll announce the cover photo. 2 months after that, you know, you'll start marketing. You know, a month after that, you know, pre-sales will start, you know, happening. So it's going to come. It's going to come really, really quick. And like I said, I'm excited, but I'm going to enjoy every single step of the process as much as I can.
Oh man, I love the Michael Jordan bit there. And like you said, I mean, you know, I'm diehard MJ. And I got pictures of me from my childhood, basically doing the same thing you're doing. I'm like palming a basketball with a Michael Jordan shirt on. That's awesome. And I'm wondering too. So has your family, have they read the entire thing yet?
So no? they have not. I know my mom and my dad, you know, I sent them chapters in the beginning, just kind of make sure that everything was accurate from my childhood days. And then from high school to college, it was all me. So my parents have a pretty good idea, but it's funny you bring that up, because my sister texted me the other day and she said, I get to read this before everybody else does. Right. Like, I mean, being your sister, you know, I get the special, you know, treatment. Right. And yeah. I responded to her as it's like that Hungry Howie's commercial with Darius Slay, where he tries to cut the line and it goes, who do you think you are? And that's what I texted her. I said, nope, you got to wait in line like everybody else. And I was like,
right.
I kind of told my sister, like, I want everything to get edited first before I let my family see it. So they'll have the first read, you know, of it. So, but I just felt like that was funny. It's like, yeah, you're my sister, but who do you think you are? Get back in the line.
Who do you think you are, sis? You're going to have to wait like everybody else. Come on now. That's hilarious. And well, man, I'm so proud of you, bro. And I want to wrap it up here with just this final question here. When people do read this memoir of your life, what is the biggest thing you want them to take away?
Oh man. You know, I'll go with three things here. Obviously the first one is to never give up hope on anybody. No matter how old they are, no matter what they're going through, just know that hope is always out there and that anything is possible. The second thing I want people to take away from this book is, number one, I don't want people to feel sorry for me, what I went through as a kid. I don't want them to. Instead, I want them to think about just how much work I put into in my life, just how much hard work got me to where I'm at throughout my days at Okemos, throughout my days at Michigan State, even Grand Valley State. I just want them to know, like, you know, I may not have been like the most talented guy, you know, on the court or on the Michigan State basketball team, but you know, my goal every day was to go out and work my butt off and kick my teammates' butt and practice every day, make my guys better as best I could. And I think the third thing is that I want people to get is that this is what an individual with autism could possibly do in life, or an individual with autism can accomplish and achieve great things in life, no matter where they're at on the spectrum. So I think those are the three things that I want people to take away from this book. And, you know, I've always talked about Al kind of being that, the next generation's Rudy, if you will, because when you and I were growing up, Rudy was that movie, you know, whether it was Rudy, Hoosiers, like those were the underdog movies that we grew up on. And, you know, that's what I've always told people, like, I want to be that next generation's underdog story that people can look up to and run with. And so, you know, I got a chance to do that, but, you know, like I said, just right now, I'm just going to enjoy the process. But the three things I named off to you, never giving up hope, just knowing how hard I worked throughout my life to get to where I'm at. And, you know, knowing that an individual with autism can do anything despite where they're at on the spectrum. Those are the three things I want people to take away the most.
All right. When we come back, we will put a bow on this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Final moments in our chat with Anthony Iani, former Michigan State men's basketball big man, now motivational speaker and author. And speaking of Rudy, and as we all know, if a memoir is good enough, you may catch the eye of some director out in Hollywood, and this thing may be turned into a movie, brother. So I want to ask a fun question. If,
sure.
if I may speak this to existence, this will become a movie at some point in your lifetime. Who do you want? What actor do you want to play? And I'm wondering.
Oh, man. You know what, Al? Like, seriously, I had my in-laws ask me the same question because we were joking around about it before I signed. And I was like, well, I said, if you would have gave me Bruce Willis like 20 years ago,
Bald head, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you gave me Dwayne Johnson 10 years ago, yeah, I'm cool with that. But I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, it's tough to figure that out with today's young cast of actors.
Yeah.
I don't know, but
they gotta have some height to them too. You know, you can't
right.
Short.
And you gotta lose your hair. You gotta have the goatee. But I will tell you this story. So when I signed, and obviously we got the rights for audio, because I know a lot of people have asked me about audiobooks. So we're trying to get that process going right now. And then we also claim the rights for film and everything. So when I told my parents that, my dad says to me, hey, if there's a movie about this thing, can I make a suggestion for who should play me? I was like, do I even want to know? He goes, yeah, you do. I said, all right, who? He said, we're going to call Denzel Washington. Denzel's going to. I go, Dad, I mean, I don't think that's even. I don't know how we're going to do that, but I said, maybe Denzel can play like Coach Garland, or maybe, you know, Morgan Freeman can like narrate the movie or something. My mom already called Julia Roberts for her part. So,
okay, there you go.
But it's funny, like, you know, you mentioned who would play you. And so just like, talking about it and just having fun with it, and then if it ever does become a reality, then I'm gonna sit back and go, yep, all this talk, you know, we talked about it and look what happened. So
right,
yeah. You know what? I got one for you, and
okay,
he might be a little too old, but I think he could pull it off somehow. I would have to go with Chris Evans.
I could see
America
that. I get, because I'm trying to picture Chris bald. He's a tall guy. I think he could probably pull that off, Ed.
Yeah, put him on some stilts or get some camera work where it's a high angle. I mean,
they
did it in Rocky IV. I mean, the guy who played Ivan Drago, he's not like this 7-foot tall monster. Like,
no, but he looks like it. Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like it in the movie. So you can make it happen with Chris Evans. Let's
right. See. Yeah, they did do that with Dolph Lundgren. I totally forgot about that, man, in Rocky IV. That is so funny.
I know who could play Coach Izzo.
Who's that?
You remember Sean Astin who played Rudy?
Yes.
That's Coach Izzo right there.
I love that. That's great. They're about the same height, right, too?
Oh, about the man. Same height, yeah.
Look at that. We're already putting Hollywood. Listen up. All right, it's coming. We already got the cash. We're getting the cash settled right now. That's awesome.
I'll put in a call to Delvon Rowe. He knows people out in Hollywood.
Oh, I'm sure, Delvon. He's out there out in Hollywood right now, man. That's awesome stuff. Well, Ant, dude, on behalf of us all here at WKAR's Current Sports, we are so proud of you. Of course, we'll have you back on as the months go by here and you get closer to finalizing things and schedule a release date. We'll get you back on and we'll chop it up some more. But you and your family stay safe. I'm proud of you, brother. Love you, man. We'll be in touch, all right?
Thanks, Al. You stay safe. Love you, brother.
Wow. How cool was that, right? It is always a great time chatting with Anthony Iani, former Michigan State men's basketball big man, motivational speaker, and as you just heard, the big news, he is now officially a published author. Awesome stuff. Folks, have a great rest of your Thursday afternoon. Go after your dreams and be great out there. Be smart, be safe, and as always, be easy, people.